We're going to head down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and our buddy Matt Moscona, who was there with ESPN Radio. I saw where you were doing morning radio again. You're a 3 to 6 afternoon guy. How you like the mornings?
I hate mornings. I don't know if y'all have ever done mornings, but that's actually where I cut my teeth in radio, was a 5 to 9 a.m. show where, you know, the wake-up call came around 3 a.m., and that's miserable. I will, if as long as God will allow, I will never do morning radio again.
Well, how many people are even listening? Because we know they like to get it after it down there. I mean, people don't get up till around noon, right?
You know what? I think life is getting back to normal a little bit. But if it's LSU football primarily, especially coming off the season that LSU just had and the curiosity about what's ahead, people are still engaged, man. It's been an interesting time, for I think, for all of us in this business. But, yeah, man, our audience hasn't changed much. Maybe how they're consuming, but, you know, cumulative audience still there, which has been fun.
All right, Matt, I saw a Twitter poll that you put up, and you asked your listeners and folks on Twitter, if you had the opportunity to attend a sporting event, would you? And 78% said yes. Now, the possibilities, and Aaron and I, we've gone back and forth, of no fans being in stands, it's still a real possibility. Number one, what does that mean for Tiger Stadium and that home field advantage? How big of an impact is that? And also, you know, number two, does the conference say, okay, if so many schools can't or decide not to have fans in the stands, do they make it mandated where no one has fans in the stands?
Well, I don't think that that can be a conference-wide decision. I think if there's one thing that we've all learned through all this is that ultimately – individual university presidents and chancellors are going to make those types of decisions. As far as the home field advantage, what it would mean for Tiger Stadium, I think it's what it would mean for basically every SEC school, say maybe Vanderbilt, who typically has more opposing fans in the stand. And that's not a knock, it's just literal. And the biggest one would obviously be for the Alabama game in November when Bama's scheduled to come to Baton Rouge. But the games itself, I don't know that they'd be so disjointed without fans, because guys, I mean, there's no fans at practices and there's scrimmages, and I think it would be more natural for the athletes than we think. You know, the poll that I did was really just a social experiment, because I don't know if y'all remember the Seton Hall poll that came out a couple of weeks back, maybe a couple months ago, which said 72% of people said they wouldn't attend a game unless if there was a vaccine. I don't know if you all remember that poll that came out.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem I had with it was they polled Americans. And you might say, well, Matt, what do you want them to poll, Europeans? No, my point was, you know, if you're polling all Americans, then, you know, John in Encino, who's a sidewalk chalk artist, may never go to a game anyway. So that's going to skew the number. The people you got to ask are fans that regularly attend games, if they would be willing to attend. And it feels like overwhelmingly sports fans are telling you, we'd go. If you let us go, we'll go. So I think that's going to be an interesting balancing act over these next, you know, 10 to 12 weeks or so, to see how much more progress we make and how much, you know, further along we come.
Matt, Every team is facing the same thing, but as it pertains to LSU, what did no spring practice mean for that football team this year?
Yeah, I do think it's significant, especially considering not only did you lose 20 players to the NFL, 14 that were drafted, obviously you're working in a new quarterback. You know, Joe Brady's no longer here, but you're also switching your defense, not just your defensive coordinator, but you're switching your scheme from what Dave Aranda did with more of a 3-4 front to Bo Pelini with a 4-3. And, man, there are position groups that need to be addressed. LSU lost four of its top six offensive linemen. You know, your battery, center quarterback, is – is gone. So who's going to be snapping the ball to Miles Brennan is obviously a big question. And, you know, where they find rotations at linebacker and at defensive end is a really big question also. So it's significant. The one thing that maybe favors LSU or lessens the impact is that everybody missed spring. So it's not that they're only at a competitive, they're the only school at a competitive disadvantage, but boy, this was a year where they certainly could have benefited from having those 15 practices, no doubt.
And Matt, we made so much, and for very good reason, not taking anything away from Steve Ensminger, but Joe Brady and what he brought to the table schematically that impacted LSU, especially with Joe Burrow last season. Scott Linehan, he's coming in. Where's the confidence level that he can duplicate, maybe replicate what Joe Brady did, or is it going to be something totally different conceptually?
Yeah, I think, and I'm glad you brought up that Ensminger's still there, because I think, you know, Steve is such an ego-less figure. It's hard to say this in a profession which is so ego-driven, and coaches want credit and they're constantly looking to ascend the coaching ladder. Steve isn't. He's content to coach ball and call plays at his alma mater and go home and sit in his favorite recliner and have a beer. I mean, that is Steve Ensminger. He is an outlier in this profession. But he doesn't get the credit he deserved for last year, because Joe Brady was obviously very much involved, but Joe's primary focus was third down. Steve Ensminger called every play, and he's still in place, which is way more significant than most people are discussing. I know the question was about Linehan, the confidence level in there. I'd say it's mixed, mostly because people don't know. Scott hasn't been in the college game in almost 20 years, and I think the common thought was that you just try to replicate the success with Joe Brady. You bring in another young guy who came from a spread-oriented offense or background and plug and play. And, you know, here we go. Almost like what Oklahoma's done at quarterback in the transfer market every year. Just, okay, next one that looks like Baker or Kyler or whoever's next. You know, Jalen Hurts. But it's a giant question mark, one that I think we all were looking forward to getting answered in spring that we'll now have to wait until the fall.
Matt, we all know how this works. If there's a great quarterback, they always are the favorite for these national awards and even the conference awards. But I started thinking, like, who's the best returning? Like, who would be the favorite for SEC Offensive Player of the Year? Is it Ja'Marr Chase? I mean, because normally, again, it's quarterback, but there's no quarterback that really stands out.
Yep. Do y'all remember the year? I've actually thought a lot about this question. So in 2013, it was like this epic year for quarterbacks in the SEC. There was McCarron and Manziel coming off the Heisman. Aaron Murray had set basically every career SEC record. Zach Mettenberger at LSU. Connor Shaw won 11 games a couple times at South Carolina.
Nick Marshall.
James Franklin at Missouri. I mean, it was a huge 2013. Exactly. 2013 was a massive year for quarterbacks in the SEC. And then 2014, it was like Dylan Thompson and Anthony Jennings. I mean, it was just such an awful year. And this one kind of looks like it might shape up like that one did. So if you're looking for an offensive player of the year in the SEC, it's either going to be a quarterback that ascends the way Joe Burrow did almost out of nowhere, or you'd look at another position. Like, could you have a year where – you know, where Derrick Henry ran for 2,000 yards. Like, could there be a back like that in the league? Maybe. And I think that's as good a bet as any. But one thing that I'm pretty certain of this year is you're going to see a reemergence of defensive dominance in the SEC, even if it's just statistically, because I think offenses naturally are going to regress because there's so much turnover at quarterback this year.
Matt Moscona, ESPN Radio, Baton Rouge, joining us here on Three-Man Front, Jocks 94.5. So let's just pretend it's mid-July and we're at SEC Media Days and we're casting our ballots
for,
you know, oh, I do too, who wins the SEC West. I'm going to cast my ballot right now. It's going to be for Alabama because there's question marks. LSU, you noted, 20 guys gone, 14 that get drafted there in the NFL draft. The different positions, both sides of the ball, you have the question marks, and the schedule. Is Alabama right now, based on what you know, is that the team that gets your first place vote as far as the SEC West? And there's so much optimism with Texas A&M and Kellen Mond. Are you buying that as well?
So I'm buying that A&M should be 10-0 going into the final 2 weeks of the season. And if they're not, that's a disappointment for them. It's almost like the same conversation we were having with Missouri last year when you looked at that schedule. It's like, man, Missouri's going to start 8-0. Look at their schedule. And then, you know, they finished 6-6 or whatever it was, and Barry Odom gets fired. This everybody who's talking up A&M, it should be because it's Jimbo. Like, this is your opportunity. I'd probably give Bama the now. Bama's got to come to Baton Rouge, and Bama also gets Georgia as the rotating cross divisional. LSU gets South Carolina, but the thing about LSU's schedule that is a bear is, with the way that they altered November now, LSU plays all conference games in November, and it's Bama, South Carolina, at Auburn, at A&M, and that is a brutal way to finish. So LSU, if they beat Florida in Gainesville, they should be 8-0 going into that Bama game, and then it's like, okay, let's see how you do in November. I think the bigger wild card is if we do get to vote, I will pick Florida to win the East this year because I think Georgia's going to lose at Bama, and I think Florida's got a great chance with Kyle Trask being a more veteran player to beat Georgia this year in the cocktail party. So if you want to call it an upset, a hot take or whatever, I would pick Florida to win the East this year.
Matt, how do you think – I mean, certainly Ed Orgeron has learned a lot in his – tenure now being head coach and maybe learn some stuff from mistakes he made previously. But how do you think he coexists with Bo Pelini? I mean, both strong personalities, both fiery types. How do you think they coexist?
This may seem naive. I don't think that's a problem. I don't know if y'all saw it, but Ross Dellinger did a long feature on Bo Pelini last week over at Sports Illustrated. And Bo's kind of telling his side of the story about how he feels like he's been sort of labeled throughout his career, which is interesting because, you know, I think Bo's mannerisms on the sideline aren't that different from, say, Nick Saban, who's a very loud, fiery, vocal head coach. The difference, obviously, is Saban's won 6 national titles, so he gets a pass on a lot of it, which is justified. I mean, he's got the resume. But Bo's resume isn't bad as well. Ed has done ever since the Matt Canada debacle in year one, Ed has done a remarkable job of managing his staff and of delegating. And I don't think, again, maybe it's naive, I don't think this is a problem. The other thing to keep in mind, Ed and Bo have known each other, both from the sort of Pete Carroll tree. They've known each other for decades. So if this looked like, you know, the powder keg moment, I don't think Ed would go back down that road. I think the other thing that aligns the two of them is they both want the same thing defensively. Ed Orgeron is a defensive line coach, and he wants defensive linemen to be fast, physical, aggressive, and go make plays in a 4-3. That's what Bo's going to do. Ed and Dave Aranda didn't really align defensively on philosophy, which created some awkward moments maybe that weren't ever public because Dave was a sort of mild-mannered guy, but I think Ed and Bo align more than most people think, and I don't think that that's going to be an issue some have made it to be.
Yeah, Matt, and you mentioned the Florida pick. I would vote them number one in the East as well, not just to piggyback, but that's something we talked about. You got question marks at Georgia, not only at the quarterback position, the offensive line, how many guys they lost, and we don't know what it's going to look like with their new offensive coordinator. That's still a question mark. But if we go big picture, college football. And Clemson, you look at what they've got coming back, their schedule, and we talk about Clemson's schedule every year, but they don't get A&M this year. They don't have that game where you go, well, if they have a hiccup here or there. Is this college football race, even with everything going on, do you see it wide open, more wide open, or do you right now look at it like it's a two-team race and it seems like Clemson and Ohio State, that's maybe going to be the rematch that we get?
I kind of feel like you can just pencil those two in the playoffs. So of the rest of college football is really vying for two spots. And the SEC champion will obviously be in there, but it feels like it's pretty wide open. If there is a year for the SEC to again get two teams in, this would be it. I will be fascinated this year to see if we all do the same thing, Landrum, if we all just draw that line. Okay, we go Clemson, Ohio State, Ohio State, Clemson, whatever order you want to do. Draw the line. And then say, okay, then there's another tier. How much of a gap is there between those two teams and the next tier is the question in college football this year, because it's either going to be Ohio State, Clemson for the national title, or some wide open year where literally maybe A&M is the team that gets in, like that year where Washington got in, you know, out of the Pac-12. Like, that wouldn't – well, Washington this year would surprise me, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was an outlier this year getting in to the playoff, and it wasn't just Bama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, you know, Oklahoma, the teams that it seems like it's been every year. I wish I could give you a hard and fast answer to the question. My gut feeling is, if I had to go to a ticket window in Vegas today and bet on who wins the national title, I would bet, and I had to bet everything, it would be Clemson. They're better at quarterback than everybody. They've obviously got Travis Etienne back. They've got the easiest path to get into the playoff. So Clemson would be the pick. But I will be fascinated to see, again, that next tier after Clemson, Ohio State, how big of a gap is there.
A few more moments with Matt Moscona, ESPN Radio, Baton Rouge. We didn't get to talk to you after the documentary there that Will Wade was featured on, if you want to say featured. What was the reaction of the LSU fan base? And given the state of the NCAA, how much do you think we hear from this, or do you think it's been an open and shut?
That was a heck of a curveball. I mean, like, yeah, complete yeah. about face.
Yeah. You were thinking outside, you know, fastball, and I just went circle change. Yeah,
buckle your knees.
Yeah, no doubt. But you know what? I'm a good hitter, so I squared
yes,
it up.
You are.
So the thing about the documentary was called The Scheme that aired. There was literally nothing new. It was just hearing what had been already transcribed. If anything, I think maybe Christian Dawkins came away as a bit more of a sympathetic figure. But with respect to the NCAA and Will Wade situation, I don't think that documentary changes anything. There's certainly still a lot of questions about the program, but the circumstantial evidence that existed prior hasn't changed today. LSU's riding with Will Wade, and the NCAA has to prove if anything happened. And, I mean, guys, my stance on this has been, I am not absolving LSU of wrongdoing. I'm not telling you nothing happened. I think it's also, you know, a reality within the NCAA that there have been times where the optics around stories look terrible and there were no punishments. Like, the optics around the Cam Newton thing at Auburn were awful. He played. The optics around Johnny Manziel videoed in a Las Vegas hotel room with gobs of merchandise looked awful. He missed like a half of football. So you're asking me, what do I think the NCAA will do? I have no idea, because I think North Carolina basketball should have been brutally punished after their cheating scandal. They got nothing. Missouri cooperates and they get a postseason ban. I mean, what's the NCAA going to do? I have no idea.
All right. You guys working in studio? You still doing stuff from home?
Yeah. So our building has really been on lockdown except for our essential on-air people. So it's this giant building that's had like 10 people in it total for like the last 2 months. But, yeah, we're in studio.
I can only imagine what you guys are doing, enjoying that, I'm sure, during the breaks like we do. But we're working from home, so – what have you learned most about yourself during this pandemic?
Honestly, as weird as this is, guys, like, my life hasn't changed that much. I mean, because I've kept coming up to studio every day, my routine hasn't really been altered. So that part has been actually not that different. And I don't think we've ever talked about this before, but I have a son who's about to be 6 years old, and he's a you know, he's got a lot of special needs, and has, you know, heart and lung issues, spent 9 months in the hospital when he was born. So my life for the last 6 years has been conditioned around protecting against respiratory viruses.
Sure.
So it's as strange as it is to say, what everybody's doing right now, social distancing, hand washing, being leery of what you touch, like, that's our everyday. So, like, I'm kind of this weird outlier that not much has really changed in my life.
Well, man, we always appreciate you coming on. Hopefully, we're going to get to see you in person coming up in mid-July, right?
If media days go on in Atlanta, we'll be there. Hopefully, if we're the same setup, they at least move Radio Row out of that very tiny little room that we were in,
yes,
in Atlanta a couple of years ago where nobody could find us.
We've requested Absolutely. That we're next to you guys, so you're our favorites.
Come on, that was fun. That was the highlight a couple of years ago, was being next to Jocks. It was like we were at the cool kid table.